It's a download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Well, the new play, The House That Will Not Stand, is on stage at the Victory Gardens through July 10th. It's a new play from resident playwright Marcus Gardley, directed by Che Yu. Che's been a guest at the big table here on the download. It's set in New Orleans, circa early 19th century, and it focuses on a free woman of color, Beatrice, who's in a left-handed marriage with a white man. In the play, the man dies, the laws change, and Beatrice is caught in the middle. Beatrice is played by award-winning actress Lizanne Mitchell. She's been the star of stage and screen, everything from Broadway to the Victory Gardens to soap operas. She was on Guiding Light. She starred in The Preacher's Wife. She was on television shows like The Good Wife and Law and Order. And she's worked with playwright Marcus Gardley before. Lizanne Mitchell, good to have you here.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's really great to have you. Also joining me tonight, Isaac Gomez. Isaac is the director of new play development at the Victory Gardens and helped bring this play to life to the stage. Isaac, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about this. I mean, it's an interesting play and really takes on, and I kind of said it in the beginning, this idea of left-handed marriage. What does that mean?
I think when whoever are the ruling class put together systems of law that benefit them. So in this particular case, we're talking about Louisiana. We're talking about in the early 1800s, and we're talking about very wealthy, rich, white men, usually of French descent or of Spanish descent. And they kind of have their cake and eat it. They have a white wife, and there's another class of women that came up who were products of black and white parentage. Louisiana, when it started off, did not have very many available white women, so the French men there tended to mate with enslaved women or indigenous women, Indian women. And out of these unions came these children who were a combination of both races, and they almost became another kind of class and were treated differently. And in order for them not to be enslaved, they set up a system called placage, where arranged marriages took place, and they weren't really marriages, but they were kind of close to that, where this mixed-race, beautiful young woman was in contract, in a contract that was put together by her mother with a wealthy white man, where she would be taken care of, her children would be taken care of, and the mother would be taken care of. This was all based on color. Mm-hmm. And I really feel that this play is extra important because it talks about the roots of why we separate according to color and why.
What attracted you to it? I mean, for you, you've done a lot of great theater. I mean, your resume is tremendous. What attracted you? I mean, was it working with Marcus again, or was it the roots of this play?
I think both. There has never been a role that I know of that has been in theater like this particular role. This is an extremely strong woman, very self-aware, and she's revolutionary in how she wants her daughters to be more free than she was. And Marcus has this extraordinary talent to write for women. There are no males in this play.
That's right. This is a full African-American female cast.
A full African-American.
And you've been in theater a while now. Mm-hmm. That's not something that you see, even when there are plays where the roles are specifically for women. They're like, well, let's have guys play. There seems a lot that goes on. But this is something that's very unique for theater.
It's very unique for theater. The things are changing, though. I just saw Eclipsed on Broadway, which had an all African-American cast of women in it, too. But Marcus is extraordinary in the way that he can almost like embody all these different kinds of women, because my daughters are very young. They're ingenues. They're like, you know, older teenagers of today. And the voice he gives to them is so authentic. I'm much older, of course. I'm their mother. And that voice is authentic, too. It's uncanny.
For you, I mean, how important is it as an actress to find plays that do have authentic voice? Because that's something that obviously speaks to you as an actress, but is it easy to find that, or is it hard to find?
It's really hard to find because most of the times things are written to please audiences. So controversy, things that are provocative, are not usually done with authenticity. Marcus is such a fabulous storyteller that it almost sneaks up on you how authentic he is being.
Well, there's something great about this play, the idea that it's not just, you know, it's set in, like we said, early sort of 19th century New Orleans. But Marcus seems to do wonders with the sort of contemporary telling of it, the idea of using contemporary language, even pop culture references, things of that nature. Isaac, let's bring you into the conversation. As the director of New Play Development, you know, where are you finding not only your resident playwrights, but you know, the subjects and the content for Victory Gardens?
Absolutely. I think the best way I describe the work we do at Victory Gardens is that we produce plays that ask incredibly hard questions with no easy answers. We tell...
That's theater.
It is. Right? Well, I mean,
hopefully.
You know, yeah, right, I think it depends. But for us, taking it to the next level is telling stories of underrepresented groups and communities, breaking open incredibly controversial and deeply provocative themes, and asking our audiences to challenge their deepest convictions. For writers like Marcus, who is a huge history buff, a large bulk of his body of work is centered on moments of history that did not make the American right. history books, and moments in history that give voices to people who otherwise would not have their stories told. And so when it comes to The House That Will Not Stand specifically, it's the story centering on this group of empowered women, resilient despite the circumstances around them, positioned in a place and time where they were failing and yet still rising above. And even over the last few performances with our audiences, seeing how much that transcends to a contemporary mm-hmm. setting and how that story resonates still true for audiences today, especially for people of color.
How, I mean, for you at the Victory Gardens, how important is it to be able to bring those hard questions to an audience? And in all honesty, are they responding to it? I mean, how are audiences responding to not just this play, but other plays at Victory Gardens where they're asking very tough questions or exposing issues that don't necessarily make it to the dinner table?
Right. No, it's true. And what I love about Chicago audiences is how excited they are by challenging questions, at least in my experience. And in terms of Victory Gardens and the work that we do, our audience responses are incredibly polarizing in a really beautiful and intricate way. We have our older, predominantly upper middle class white patron base who ask very well-meaning questions and wondering how and why certain things are happening the way they are. And then our younger, more diverse patrons who are saying, this is my life, so we don't need to inquire deeply about it. It is what it is. And what's so beautiful about what our shows provide is an opportunity for that conversation to exist in places where it probably never would have. And we're not here to give the answers, but what we can do is provide a platform to have the discussion.
Lizanne, let me bring you back in, because for you as an actress, are you seeking out pieces of writing, plays that are going to have those kind of at the heart challenging questions, hard things that audiences, you know, don't necessarily have the answers for? Versus, you know, finding parts that are going to be of a different ilk.
I'm so glad you asked that, because I was thinking about this, and I have been thinking about this almost all my acting career. I think it's so important when you have the attention of all these people to be about saying something that's going to mean something. Mm-hmm. And so I've had very good fortune in having the kinds of roles that speak to the truth, but are enshrouded in a great story, because people don't want to be banged over the head with how they're supposed to think. But I think ever since the beginning, sitting around a campfire involved in a great story, you just get pulled in. You know, and you want to participate, and you want feedback about it, and you want to know what's going to happen next. And before you know it, a conversation can take place easily, because the play is the conduit of the truth.
For you, you know, you've done, I mean, just looking at your resume, I mean, you 30, 40, 50 play. I mean, it's a great career. For you, are you seeking out those kind of roles at this point? I mean, are you looking for those kind of texts? Or are you still, as many actresses and many actors in the world, just sort of, you know, going where the parts are?
No, I think, you know, always for me, being able to be authentic has been really, really important. And, you know, when you think about who you are and why you are here on this planet, what your gift is and what is going to make life meaningful for you, and you get to do it through something you love doing, like acting in plays, it's like a dream come true. It is not always manifested in a lot of money, but the personal growth and gratification that I've gotten from being able to tell what life is about through this means has been priceless.
As in, just as have you grown in that role? Like, I'm thinking of you as a young actress coming out of school. Was that always the thought, where you're like, okay, I want to do something. I want to affect this. I want to affect an audience member. Or is that something that you've grown with in your career?
You know, ever since I was little, I was always impressed by the power of sound. And that sound is one of those kinds of energies that transcends walls. It affects your whole being. And even when I was little, I would hear certain actresses' voices, because I've known I wanted to act a long time. And I actually trained myself from a little girl to kind of lower my voice and to grab a hold to certain words that almost tell you what they mean by how they sound. And so to be able to take that and tell a story, I mean, I get more out of it than the audience sometimes.
That's good to hear. Isaac, let's turn to, I mean, you wear many hats at Victory Gardens, one of which is director of public programs. You know, there's a lot of talkbacks. There's a lot that goes on beyond the play at Victory Gardens. And one thing that Che has brought to them, we talked about it when he was on the show, about this idea of making theater much more immersive, that it's not just about what's on stage. It's the talkbacks afterwards. It's the programs around. When it comes to this play, when it comes to The House That Will Not Stand, what are you doing to create a full, complete story around the play?
Absolutely. I think what's really fun about creating our public programs is it starts with deconstructing the plays based on their themes and then reconstructing them through ideas and references in which most people are already accustomed to experiencing in their day-to-day life, to make theater that much more relevant to what you're seeing on the street. And so for The House That Will Not Stand, I mean, this play's existed for a few years now. And when Marcus talks about this play, it's so beautiful because he speaks about it as his love letter to Black women, to the Black women in his life, especially his grandmothers who are from New Orleans. And as we were prepping for this play, Beyoncé's visual album Lemonade dropped, and she calling that her love letter to Black women, and the immense amount of Black female empowerment that comes from this play is something that a lot of theaters are hard. They may not embrace that as widely as we do. And so these concepts of Black girl magic and having pre-show Reiki and spiritual healing and divination and live artistry, featuring Black female performers to perform in our lobby before The House That Will Not Stand, to town hall discussions centering on Black women in theater and the lack of representation of them, to post-show conversations centering on colorism and free women of color movement and all these areas that are seldom explored, or to even the representation of sexuality among Black women, and in which ways are they fetishized, in which ways are they not. And so embracing that has been, at least in the response that we've received over the last few days, has been incredible. There's a deep, deep yearning for Black women to have a platform to live their life, speak their truth, and live in self-love. And we're thrilled that this play can be a platform for that.
As a Black actress, have you seen more opportunity as 2016 than you did, say, 10 years ago in your career, or even 15, 20 years ago? I mean, are you seeing more opportunity for women of color on the stages across America?
Absolutely. I can remember stopping for 6 years because the roles were so demeaning. I couldn't perform them and live with myself. So a friend of mine, you know, saw me in Atlanta and said, "You stopped acting? I cannot believe that." And she caused me to come back, you know, because she said, you know, things are so much better now. I had really given
just because the parts were just, like you said, demeaning.
Yeah, I can remember, like, I came up in the South, and the school that I went to, the high school that I went to, we weren't allowed to participate in theater unless we played slaves or maids. So, you know, if the play didn't involve that, you didn't have the opportunity to even perform. So when, you know, I got to college and was performing, my teachers were shocked. They said, oh, we didn't know. I said, no, of course you couldn't have known.
So, I mean, for you, I mean, working with Marcus, having a chance to do it again, to sort of be inspired and to participate and collaborate with an artist, a playwright like Marcus, do you see yourself gravitating towards that, like finding playwrights that speak to you or that speak for you as an actress and gravitating to those kind of roles develop a relationship with a playwright?
Absolutely. I mean, but, you know, that's been my way all the time. And I really don't like to, this is rare for me to do a play over. I like to do new work. I don't like to do revivals, any of that. But this play gets richer and richer and richer, and Marcus has come in. I didn't think he could make it better, but he has rewritten whole sections of this play, and he has deepened my character till I love her more than I ever did before. She's very strong, and she can be considered mean and all of those kinds of things, but the love she has in her heart and how that love manifests is just unbelievable, and it's written at, this is Marcus's real grandmother. So I'm not portraying somebody fictional. Maybe time-wise I am, but in reality I am modeled after his grandmother. So I have to live up to that.
Lizanne Mitchell is the star of the show The House That Will Not Stand at the Victory Gardens. It's Marcus Gardley's play. It's running till July 10th. Thank you for being here. We appreciate
thank
you talking
you so
about
much
it.
For having
also,
us.
Isaac Gomez, Director of New Play Development at Victory Gardens. Good luck with the show.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.